to say I've heard of you, but I'm not too familiar with your show.
The Bob and Sherry Show with Bob.
My wife comes through the door, and she just wants to jerk me around just to see what happens.
And Sherry.
I can't believe a woman would do that to you.
And now, from the palatial Bob and Sherry Studios, it's Bob and Sherry.
And welcome to the Bob and Sherry Show. We are all here, and I thought I would start us off today with something that is very, very positive. You hear about these billionaires. They seem to be all over America now. Yeah. They didn't exist when I was a kid. Nobody had $1 billion back then. And I know, you know, it's inflation and all of that. But you just hear about, well, so-and-so, the billionaire, and I've never heard of the guy, right? But somehow he made $1 billion. Well, there is an American billionaire. His name is Chuck Feeney. And he just gave away, I don't know how old Mr. Feeney is, but he just gave away more than 99% of his $6.3 billion to help underprivileged kids go to college. He is now not worth $6.3 billion. Mr. Feeney is now worth $2 million. That is a gift.
Wow.
I want you to just think about that. You had $6.3 billion. So you're in the top 1/5% of, when I say 1/5 of 1% in the world. And now it's not like you kept a billion just to feel cool, right? Just to feel, yeah, you never know what's going to happen. He gave it all away for kids to go to get a higher education. And he's now worth $2 million.
And $2 million ain't nothing. I mean, you can live very comfortably on $2 million, I think, right? Does anybody want to argue that
If his house is paid for, he's probably okay.
Yeah. Oh, his house. I'm sure his house is paid
for. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. He doesn't have to leave a ton of money for a bunch of people to fight over or whatever. And he gets to see the benefit of his money. Not very many people that have that kind of money will ever see the benefit. He's going to see the benefit.
That's very true.
Hats off.
Yeah, without a doubt. Hey, if I got my recollection right, Max was in a similar situation. Didn't you have some really rich relatives?
Yes,
and
I
they
did.
They left everything for society. And unfortunately, nothing for you. Is that right?
That is true. For people to have scholarships and whatnot. In fact, they died a long time ago. When I did the family tree stuff, the person that did the family tree stuff found out that the money that they left has been so well managed, they're still giving out scholarships many years later, like 50 years later, over 50 years later.
Well, I know that makes you feel good that, you know, despite the fact you got nothing.
Bob, I just would have blown it on a bunch of ridiculous tchotchke. I wouldn't have wanted that money. It would have ruined my life. Can you imagine what an awful, shallow person I would have become instead of the person that's had all these character building experiences from being, you know, near the poverty line?
Yeah.
Hey, Lamar, you know what you know what they say about people who are liars? They can't stop talking. Wow.
Oh, gosh.
I got to be honest.
That's a great story, though. It's a great story.
It is a great story. I don't know anything
else.
It's
really not a great story for me.
I don't know anything about Mr. Feeney, but he did a great thing, and I hope a lot of kids are helped with that. I do wonder if he had relatives.
Hey, Max.
Oh, that he didn't give money to? Is that what you mean? That he gave the money away to everybody else? You know, I'm Max, sure he did. I mean, who doesn't, right? Have relatives somewhere.
I think it's better for Max to look back into his ancestors to see that they had a lot of money that didn't get to him. Bob, we don't want you to look back and find out that about three generations back, some guy had a gazillion dollars and didn't leave.
Can I just ask, what is richness? Richness of spirit is the most important thing. Wouldn't you look back on that and say that? The rest of it all is fleeting, but relationships, richness in spirit.
Hey, Lamar, still talking.
Yeah. That's what all poor people say. Oh, yeah, right. We got a great life. We got a rich family. Yeah, we got a great life. Oh, my God.
I didn't say I had a great life. I just said that is what's most important.
That's the most important. Yeah.
You know what I was supposed to inherit and I did not inherit? I was supposed to get $1,800 when my often referred to grandmother Shea passed away. $1,800 was left for each grandchild. And I was one of the grandchildren. And so she passed away and I was very sad. I was living very far away. And I was waiting for the $1,800 and I called an aunt. And the aunt said, you get nothing. Because you really were not close to her. And I'm making the decision. From the grave, Shay
stuck it to you. She really did.
It's good that you let go of that, though, huh?
Yeah.
No,
that was a long
actually,
time
I
ago.
Did because we were not close, and I needed the money so badly at that point. But I just
aren't
went.
You glad
okay.
You didn't
I'm
get,
not
though.
Letting go.
Aren't you glad you didn't?
Yeah. I'm not. Actually, I am. It's Bob and Sherry.
Instant access to the podcast, Oddcast, Fun Size, and more with the free Bob and Sherry app.
So prior to going on, we have 2 to 3 staff meetings prior to hitting the air every day. And we get back together
that's
several times.
One.
Yeah,
no,
right.
We start about 2 a.m.
About 2 a.m.
Yeah, we start about 2 a.m.
Yeah, the second one is at 3:30, right? Anyway, we were talking about, should we talk about Kate Middleton? You know, is she alive? Is she just in terrible shape? Is she fine? And I brought it up because I found something online. TMZ supposedly obtained a video of the Prince and Princess of Wales walking around the Windsor Farm Shop on Saturday. So that's, I don't know what it is, obvious vegetables, fruits they sell near Windsor Castle, I'm guessing.
It's a place that's not well lit, I can tell you that.
Really?
Good, yeah.
Kate is beaming, though she looks like she's been recovering from something. I don't know how do you tell that if somebody is beaming and it looks like she's recovering from something? Witnesses said that she looked, quote, happy, relaxed, and healthy. Everyone can breathe easy now. So I read that to Sherry. Take it away, Sherry.
That's not her in that video. And that video is old. Sorry. And I know how that sounds. I know I sound like a tinfoil hat wearing kook, which, thank you, that description does apply. But I don't believe that's her for a second. First of all, it's the year of our Lord 2024. And the best we can do is a Sasquatch-style blurry video of two people walking, one of whom could be William, but it's hard to tell. He's got a ball cap on and his face down and slightly turned. And another person who, when you strip it and clear it so that it's in focus, like, wow, that abdominal surgery seems to have also removed her mole and her dimples and made her 20 years younger. And please don't say, well, maybe she had cosmetic surgery, because cosmetic surgery is an amazing thing, but it ain't taken 2 decades. Okay?
Yeah.
Fight me on that. Right?
Yeah.
The walk is wrong. The gait is wrong. And also, by the way, British royal family, if Kate is recovering from serious abdominal surgery, the hell's she doing carrying grocery bags and sprinting like a colt in tight pants? Like, come on. It's not. And those wooden little barns that you see, those are part of the Christmas market situation. And the local zoning ordinances require they come down in February. I don't know anyone who believes that video. Some people say it's AI. I'm not suggesting that, but that does not look like Kate Middleton to me. And I just want to tell you, okay, now it gets really tinfoil hat. Okay, get ready. Here we go. TMZ released that video. TMZ is owned by Fox Corporation. Fox Corporation is owned by Rupert Murdoch. The Sun newspaper in England that amplified the TMZ story is also owned by Rupert Murdoch. I smell something rotten here. And again, let me just say, it would take almost nothing for the British royal family to clear up and end all of this crazy conspiracy Kate Gate drama. And they're not doing it. And I believe they're not doing it because they can't do it. I don't know why they can't do it. Is she catastrophically ill? Is she in a coma? Did William beat her to death, like some people say? I have no idea, but I don't for a second believe that video is legit. And I don't care how crazy that makes me sound.
Max, he couldn't have beaten her to death. The whole thing that he beat her to death is just preposterous.
That's crazy. I agree.
The longer this goes on and the more cryptic the things that are released, the worse it gets for them. Can they not get ahead of this and be honest about what's going on? Now, I understand she probably needs privacy if she is recovering for something, but can't you say that if that's the case?
If that's her in that video, all she's got to do is step up to a microphone within 2 feet of one of those reporters and just talk for 30 seconds. That's all she's got to do.
It's as simple as that.
How about an Instagram account? Don't they have that? And just take a short video and go, hey, I know you all are worried about me. Let me tell you, I'm fine, and that sort of thing. Right?
That's the way to do it, because they could control it that way. There's no questions that are asked. And the lighting can be very good, blah, blah, blah.
The metadata would be clean, right?
Yeah,
Everything about it, exactly. Like, the press has now pulled apart the photograph of Queen Elizabeth with all the grandchildren, except for Harry's, of course. And that's been revealed to be manipulated and jacked up to the moon. Look, I'm the parent of teenage girls, and I'm here to tell you, when the answer is truthful, it's simple. And when the answer isn't truthful, it's like a Christopher Nolan movie. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wait, and then who said, and then whose mom did, and then wait, what happened? And oh, is that why your phone location was turned off? The more complicated and insane the answer, the more likely somebody's trying to not tell you something. And
you're
I don't
right.
know what that is.
You're right. And those, it's not like those people are not used to the spotlight and media. And attention. That's the job. That is the job. The expression with photographers and writers of newspapers over there is, hey, we give you money, now pose. In other words, that's your job.
So you just have to ask yourself as we head into morons in the news, if the truth is simple and the way to end this is simple, then why don't you do that? And please don't tell me it's because you're royalty, because I'm a filthy colonial rabble and I'm going to spit on the king. I don't have to respect that at all. We won that war. All right. We won it. If the truth is simple, then tell me the simple truth. And if the truth is crazy, then please continue to sound like one of my daughters who missed curfew. Morons in the News is next. It's Bob and Sherry. Morons in the News is sponsored by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go.
It's Bob and Sherry.
Don't be a moron.
With Morons in the News.
There are two things that really don't go together comfortably. The word skydiving and the words hard landing. And that is what happened in Tampa, Florida, according to the Lake Wales Police Department. I don't know who is packing the chutes, but three skydivers were found at about 3 p.m., after having a hard landing. Witnesses told police that one person's parachute appeared to be tangled, while the other two appeared to be okay. But they jumped. They were with a group of 14 people. They jumped from 14,500 feet to practice formations. And something went wrong. Nobody died, thank God. They were taken to the hospital, and they're going to be okay. But they're trying to figure out what went wrong. One of the parachutes, as I said, was tangled. I think the tangled one might have gotten up when they were trying to do one of those formation things with a couple of the other two. So either the chute was not packed right or something went down wrong and the two other guys just got caught up in it. And thank God the hard landing wasn't any harder. My question to you is, do they go up for another practice or is that it?
Well, it seems like they need another plane practice again. Yeah. I can't speak for them, but I'm so terrified by what you just said. I'm never even flying again, much less going up for another practice.
I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know who have jumped out of a plane and said, I'm glad I did it. I'll never do it again. I will never do it again. So are you telling me coming in hot? to the earth is going to encourage you to go up again? I think I would just say, for some reason, God gave me a pass. I'm going to take up gardening.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Lamar.
Well, while we're still on the plane, does everybody remember a week or so ago I talked about the Latham Boeing plane that did the roller coaster dive between Australia and New Zealand? You know,
people hitting
this, bouncing off the ceiling, pandemonium, 50 people required medical assistance. Well, they sort of tracked this thing down, and U.S. industry officials, they got briefed on a preliminary investigation that says the plunge may have been caused by a flight attendant hitting a switch on the pilot's seat while serving him a meal, activating a motorized feature by mistake. And this motorized feature, it pushes the pilot forward into the controls. Now, the switch has a cover, and it's not supposed to be used when the pilot is sitting at the controls. The airline declined to comment further until the investigation is completed. Covered or not covered, should that button not be somewhere that's harder to get to?
Yes.
Her handing him soup, and the next thing you know, they're, oh, my God. No confidence builders here, boy. No confidence builders.
And finally, our moron of the day is a story that you're not expecting, and you'd never guess it if I gave you your whole life. In December of last year, more than 100 of the top surgeons in China took part in a three-hour-long online circumcision contest.
I'm sorry. What did you just say?
In December, more than 100 of the top surgeons participated in a three-hour online circumcision contest. Each surgeon presented a pre-recorded six-minute circumcision video with live voiceover as they explained, like, here's what we do. Here's the protection device you wear afterward. Here's some post-op ointment. People watching the contest had to have like this strict identity verification process to confirm they were serious observers. And one viewer said, at first, seeing so many male reproductive organs made me feel a bit curious and embarrassed, but I quickly adapted and focused on the surgery. Because if you're wondering, no, many of the people in this contest were not infants or children.
Yeah.
They were grown men.
Yeah.
One doctor, listen, this is all I'm going to share, and then I will just post the story online. One of the doctors participating in the contest shared the story of a man who believed that circumcision would be good for him, but he was too embarrassed to go to a doctor. So he bought some tools online and attempted an at-home circumcision, which left him with a painful injury to no one's surprise ever. Hey, guys, listen up. Listen. When I'm telling you not to give yourself a home circumcision, come on.
That's true. That's true.
I enjoy a novel experience and a good laugh as much as anybody.
Yeah.
Do not order an online circumcision kit from Temu or Amazon or eBay and attempt this at home.
Yeah.
That is Morons in the News. Coming up, we have comedian Theo Von. We got some vulture vomit for you. Our table manners dying out.
This keeps getting better.
Yeah, this is a good show. Yeah. Home circumcision, vulture vomits, table manners. Well, I mean, at least you know where you are. This is Bob and Sherry.
Sign up for our newsletter. We never spam you.
Never did.
Get Bob and Sherry exclusives. Just go to bobandsherry.com.
I don't know if y'all saw this on your news, but authorities went into a home in upstate New York, in a town south of Buffalo, and removed a sickly 750-pound, 30-year-old alligator from the home. The gator is over 11 feet long, and like I said, he's 30 years old and sickly. The people who owned the gator and the house had built an addition and put in an in-ground swimming pool for the gator. And they would allow people to come over and get into the pool with the alligator, including children.
Good Lord!
The alligator is blind in both eyes and has issues with his spine. He was sent to a caretaker until they can find like a rescue or someplace where the gator can receive permanent care. So the people who own the alligator, they had a license to keep it, but it expired back in 2021. And the state of New York decided at that time that the gator's holding area wasn't up to safety standards. And then they found out that people were coming over and getting in the swimming pool with the gator. The owner, whose name is Tony Caballero, because of course it is, and the alligator, whose name is Albert, because why not? He said, Albert the gator's been with him since the 90s, and I am fighting for his return. That gator is like my child and never put anyone in danger. Tony Caballero said, I'm not being unsafe with people.
Yeah, you are, Tony. You really are.
He's treating that gator wrong. That he should be put locked up for the way he's treated that alligator.
Treating the gator.
Blind and everything.
Those things live a long, long life. I don't think 30 years. It's obviously he was not in the wild.
Yeah,
I can tell you that when I watched the video of them going into this house and getting the gator, I couldn't even speak. My jaw was just dropped that much. Like, you did what? Wait, you... And they did. They built a pool, and the pool was covered. It was inside the house. So you didn't know there was a gator.
House.
Like, it was an addition with a pool and a roof and walls and everything. Yeah. Like, so you didn't know there was a gator in there. I want to meet the parents who were like, oh, yeah, we took the kids over to the Caballeros and let it swim in the pool with the 750-pound, 11-foot gator. What?
Yeah, anything for a selfie.
Some of y'all won't give your kids Sunny D, but you put it in the pool with a gator? It's Bob and Sherry.
Instant access to the podcast, and fun side. Just download the free Bob and Sherry app.
You know, we talked about a few weeks ago that Miami Beach was getting ready for the spring break thing, and their message was, stay home. We're not doing spring break. Stay home.
Yeah,
And they put a stuff in. They've imposed like a weekend curfew starting late Friday night and lasting until Monday morning because they're trying to keep the crowds down. And it goes from like 11:59 until 6 a.m. the following morning. And the city manager said, you know, we consulted with our public safety leadership and we've determined that a midnight curfew is necessary and appropriate to assist in maintaining public safety because of the spring break. And one of the spring breakers pointed out that, yes, there's a heavy police presence. All you can see, they're everywhere. They're on every single block in every street. And businesses that are in that area, now this is not all of Miami, but it's in that area where they've always had the spring break stuff. The businesses are required to close right before, you know, early enough in advance so that everybody can comply. And so if you're on the street, the police, they're taking you in. I mean, they're not putting up with it. And then they have a special event zone that goes from 8 p.m. on Friday until 7 a.m. on Monday, and it's been designated. And they have fines for non-criminal traffic infractions. Everything is doubled. All the fines and stuff is doubled, and they can impound your car. They can do anything. I mean, now businesses in that area, they'll be allowed to continue the operations from midnight to 6 for delivery only. So everything's got to be shut down. And it says that all city residents requiring access to or from their homes, guests requiring access to or from motels and hotels, and employees of business establishments requiring access, including business deliveries, are permitted. This is code for people old as dirt, okay? For us that are not having, we're not down there. We're not down there to do what they're down there to do. And here's the deal, though. The sale or distribution of alcoholic beverages in this area for off-premise consumption is prohibited after 6 p.m. every day. Now,
man, that would cramp a lot of people's style who aren't spring breakers, wouldn't it?
Well, that's one of the concerns. They're saying that, you know, this could really hurt businesses. I mean,
without a doubt,
they're taking a hit. You know, and one of the guys said, look, there's likely to be many businesses going out of business at different hotels and different things because they can't do it. One of the most popular things in this area is Mango's Tropical Cafe. It's right on Ocean Drive. It's shutting its doors for the whole weekend. And this guy says it owns it. He said, there's a lot of people and it's all pretty much pushed to the west sidewalk where I'm at. And he said, we've got a very open front. And last year I had 16 stampedes come through the place. He said, the cash register is not the important thing. It's safety first right now. So they're battening down the hatches. I mean, people are still coming, but buddy, they got to be on their best behavior.
That is such a change. Mary and I stayed on Miami Beach in one of those old classic hotels, Art Deco hotels, about 5-6 years ago. And right next to us, there was a bar. And I mean, we were paying pretty good money for this hotel room. Right next to us was a bar. And the drag show started at 11 o'clock at night and went till 4 o'clock in the morning. There were people on the street screaming. I mean, it was pretty much out of control. But the idea, if you're a bar owner, you're making your nut right now. You're making it for the whole year. Selling high-priced margaritas until 4 o'clock in the morning. If that's taken away, that's a big chunk of what you're going to be making. But if you are, you know, someone that is not there to raise hell, you just want to go to Miami Beach, it's miserable. And if you live there, I can see how some of it is dangerous because there are fights.
Yeah.
The alcohol is involved. It's going to be happening.
They have all kinds of violence and shootings.
Killings, yes.
Yeah, I get the whole thing that Miami Beach is saying.
I never went on spring break, and none of my kids ever did one of these like traditional, like raucous, debauched spring breaks. How about you guys? Like, my kids will go, like, they'll get together with their friends, and, you know, somebody's parents will be like, we'll take you to the beach. But this idea of like my daughter's strapping on Uzis and loincloths and heading to Miami to commit felonies, like, no.
I did it in Daytona when I was in college.
You did.
I did it in Myrtle Beach. But back then, it was still, you know, but Myrtle Beach had control because the legend was when you went down there for after graduation to Myrtle Beach, the last place you want to be is a Myrtle Beach jail. Don't go. We were all terrified. Don't go to Myrtle Beach jail. You may not come out alive. I don't know if it was true or not, but nobody didn't want to test it. So.
Bob and I have been working and supporting other people since we were toilet trained. So neither of us can relate to this because I know Bob
can't
hasn't had that experience
it.
Either at all.
The term spring break in North Haven, Connecticut did not exist. No one had heard of it except in maybe some Connie Francis movie. But no, I never went. I mean, you and I have been supporting ourselves, you know, eking out some sort of a living since we were like 17,
kids.
16.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. This is Bob and Sherry.
It's the stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, shouldn't do on the regular show. The Oddcast. Oddcast on the free Bob and Sherry app.
If you're a teacher, we want to send you on a vacation to Florida. You'll stay at the Margaritaville Beach Resort in Fort Myers Beach. You and a guest will enjoy 3 days and 2 nights of relaxation from Visit Florida. Nominate yourself or a fellow teacher at bobandsherry.com.
About 5 years ago, you and I had a sponsor that was Cryo Freeze CBD pain relief roll-ons.
Not only do I remember it, but I swear by it. Yeah. I still buy it and use it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So does my wife. Now, when we were advertising them, I had to, you know, not go really hard because during that period, I didn't have any aches and pains. So I couldn't go on and say, oh, you know, it got my toe. It was killing me and it helped. You know, I would just talk about it that we hear it's a great product. And you would lean into it saying, oh, yeah, it really, really works. So, I have a pain in my left elbow that was so bad. Just picking up a glass of water would shock me. And I was taking ibuprofen and nothing was working. And I'm thinking, I need to go to the doctor and get a shot, you know, a cortisone shot. I don't want to do that. So I found the CBD oil, the cryo. And this is not a commercial, by the way. We're not getting paid by them.
No.
But Mary had some. And I rolled it on. It worked. It took about 60 seconds, and I'm not saying there isn't a little something there, but it's taken the edge off so that I hopefully will heal naturally. And
no, it's good stuff. It is really good stuff.
Yeah.
So you hurt your left elbow. I mean, how many times have I told you, Paul Bunyan, to stop out there swinging your axe and chopping wood? I mean, how many times have we talked about this?
Well, I heard it. I did hurt it outside, but I wasn't chopping wood when I was doing this.
Were you?
It was
were you pulling
motion.
Up tree roots?
Were you waving at neighbors?
No.
I know he was definitely not waving. If he was, if he injured himself with a repetitive motion, I'm here to assure you it wasn't waving at the neighbors.
Right. I got it. No. I was skimming the pool with my net for leaves.
Oh my God, the humanity. Hang on. Mm. You injured yourself skimming your pool? Mm-hmm. Folks, can you spare a dollar a day to help a man recover from his elbow pain?
Stop it. Okay.
Acquired whilst skimming his
pool. It's a small pool we had built last year for the grandchildren. So far, they've been in it once. But
can we not get you automatic pool cleaner? I think we can all chip in and get you
a little robot.
I
you know
got
what really
one.
Worries
it only
me?
Does yeah. It only does the sides and the bottom. So the leaves fall and float, and the robotic thing doesn't work. I have to do it.
But you got a skimmer? Don't the skimmer get it?
Oh, God.
I'm the skimmer. That's why I have the.
Oh, you are the skimmer. Oh.
Yeah,
hey, Lamar, right. He's keeping it real, skimmer. Yo. Okay. He is the skimmer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
If he was bougie, he'd buy a skimmer, but he's the skimmer. You know what scares me? Right. If you have injured your elbow skimming your pool, that's your champagne drinking hand, Thurston. How will we cope?
Oh, I didn't think about that. You're right.
Lamar, you're a man of faith. Is there anything you can do?
I will
is there
pray
any
for
healing?
You, Bob.
Prayer you can
I will
offer.
Pray for
it's
you.
The cryo it's the cryo freeze. God bless them. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Hands
I was having a hard time getting into my double-breasted blazer.
When you realized that you had injured yourself skimming your pool, did you have the decency to feel embarrassed or what? Like, walk me through that.
Oh no, I went right in and told my wife, you know, right away. I was letting her know what I was doing for her.
Hey, Bob. Uh-huh. If you've got that shoulder, is it hard? Is it hard to put the ascot on with that shoulder pain? I mean,
all right, shut up, all of you.
Is that tough? Is that tough? Because I know, if you can't get the right fold on that ascot, it's a problem. It's a problem.
It all began at a small radio station in Fall River, Massachusetts, ladies and gentlemen.
I hope he's not using a clip-on cravat, Lamar. That's so tacky.
Well.
Next step is a dicky. The next step is
you're out of my life. You're out of my life. I'll never tell you another thing, except this stuff works pretty good. It's Bob and Sherry. Everyone Needs a Laugh is sponsored by Sherwin-Williams.
It's time for Everyone Needs a Laugh. Here is comedian Theo Von.
My town's most famous, Lee Harvey Oswald, went to our middle school. Yeah. True story. Basketball player Pistol Pete Maravich lived and died in our town, so two good shooters. From downtown, both of them. Tulane University, that's a famous college. University, yeah. It's a center for higher learning. They had their primate testing facility in our town, right? The Monkey Center. And that's where most people were employed at, by the Monkey Center. And in 1994, 70 infected monkeys got out, and they let us out of YMCA summer camp to help the police look for them. So what have you done with your life, okay? Until you and six kids you barely know in wet bathing suits have surrounded 9 chimpanzees outside of a Wendy's, you probably really don't know yourself, okay? Yeah, man, I'm from a small town, dude. They just busted a man in my town with a 30-pound bag of hamster bones on him. Yep, they got him. How many hamsters do you think that is, Brother Bear? 30 hamsters, dude? Wow, y'all supposed to be good at math, Cat Daddy. Strike one for Asians tonight. I used to sell hamsters, man. Yeah, I used to be in the hamp game. True story, dude. My first job selling hamsters and G-pigs, guinea pigs. Yeah. Oh, guinea pigs are beautiful. Okay? If you haven't seen them recently, you're missing out. Don't blame it on them, okay? Go to the pet shop. Take a sandwich. You can eat by the cages. They're beautiful animals, dude. They're the Clydesdales of small ground game. But I used to sell hamsters and G-pigs growing up outside of concerts and raves. Yeah. I'm not, that's my first job, man. Because people leaving concerts, what are they on, sir? They're on drugs. Yeah. Drugs, liquor, weed, uppers, downers, rounders, bruh. Side splitters, daddy. Ecstasy pills. Ecstasy pills. And you approach them with that hound? That warm, furry, living, lively little eclair of the Lord? They buy that thing for $20 every time. The first time Green Day came through town, we made almost $400 selling hamsters and G-pigs to people on ecstasy. What else? Oh, my cousin got bit by a gay guy. So we'll see.
It was so bizarre.
So
right
unhinged.
Out of the chute. Yeah. Oh my
that
goodness.
Was awesome.
You know what my favorite image was that? Bring a sandwich into the pet store and sit there and look at the guinea pigs.
I felt like he didn't talk enough about his YMCA summer camp group hunting for escaped monkeys.
I know. And you know that was true. It's too bizarre not to be.
It's a vivid picture in your head of him in the parking lot at Wendy's and the chimpanzee.
Yeah, right.
Here's the thing. Like, that's how you know you're living some kind of life when that's not the biggest thing you talk about. You know, that's one thing that's happened to you. You are fully drinking from the cup of life. He's not wrong about guinea pigs being magnificent. I have been trying to talk my husband into having a pet capybara. Do you know what a capybara is? In the county we live in the state we live in, they're legal, but they're not legal in our county, which I've never seen a man so happy to have the law go against him as that man was when he found out we couldn't have a capybara.
What are they like?
You to picture a hamster the size of a hog.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a capybara. I follow a bunch of different capybara accounts on social media because my life is
rich. Can you train them?
I've seen videos where they're playing on the couch with somebody's Labrador. They like to take baths. They're really friendly and sweet. They are the world's biggest rodent. And you can see them in zoos sometimes. I think that you could probably litter box train them. It's been my experience that you can litter box train just about anything, including a human. Like, you can just about get anything to go in a litter box. So I have been campaigning hard for a pet capybara, and I could see that he was weakening. I could see him weakening. I could see his resolve faltering. And then he came to me, and this was just recently, like within the last couple of weeks, he came to me and said, "Woman, I got bad news. They're not allowed in this county." And the relief on that man's face made me just double down on my commitment to bringing a giant rodent into this household.
I bet.
It's Bob and Sherry.
Bob and Sherry books, swag, and the mother of all mothers merch. Just hit shop at bobandsherry.com.
Women in America are so doubtful of their man's do-it-yourself skills, they would rather call in a professional than let their guy loose with a hammer. 61% of women think that their man is incapable of completing the most basic do-it-yourself jobs. Top of the list, women felt their partners couldn't finish with a good standard, was fitting a kitchen, like putting in a new faucet or something like that, followed by tiling a bathroom, laying floor, and perhaps most worrying, replacing a plug socket and then wallpapering. The only one that I think I could come close to would be the wallpapering, and I think that would look a little off somewhere. I'm embarrassed that I don't have any. I know Kevin can do all of that and more. He built the deck in the back of my house, the last house, and everything. I really do wish I had those skills. And before I say, well, my father never spent any time with me, he didn't have a shop, and people are saying, oh, you could have learned it yourself if you really wanted to. And that is actually true. That is actually
I can't
true.
Do anything. I can't do anything.
See, that surprises me. I would think
I could change a wall socket. I could change a wall socket or something like that. But, I mean, as far as building a deck or doing anything like that, no, I can't do that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Kevin can do anything, but finishing it is a problem.
You know, I hear that all the time. Yeah.
In order to get things, listen, if you want to live in an unfinished home, marry the guy who built it. But in order to get things finished here, I have to incentivize him. And I'm just telling you, boys, ain't but so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
For these incentives.
Right. Well,
I got to deal with a handyman. I won't do no work around the house, and he don't talk on the radio. We good to go.
Hey, as long as you're not incentivizing him the way I'm incentivizing, I think it's probably
that's what I was worried about. Yeah, that jumped out at me too.
It depends. It depends on how good he is on a deck.
Hey, you need a new deck. You need a new deck.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you gotta have some more. I got
Yeah, they're not cheap.
You can get a lot done in your head, is what I've learned. You can get a lot of stuff done in your head.
It's Bob and Sherry.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate happy hour Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page.
It is talk back time, and you can call us on the phone at 844-52-SHERI, or you can snatch up the Bob and Sherry app. It's free in Google Play and the Apple Store, and you can listen to the show every day and all of the podcasts, including Talking Lamar and the Oddcast and True Weird Stuff. And you can tap that little microphone in the bottom center of the screen and talk. And the app will do the rest.
Hey, this is Betty, and I wanted to let Lamar know that vultures vomit as a defense mechanism. So maybe something scared a bunch of vultures at the same time. Found that out when I went to Callaway Gardens for the Birds of Prey show. Love the show. Hope this helps explain the mystery.
I think we should try to explain for first-time listeners the mystery of the vulture vomit.
Please, Bob.
They had, it's been many, many eons ago, they had a meat shower. A lady was out making soap, like people always did, and she, all of a sudden, pieces of meat started falling from the sky like it was raining. But there was not a cloud in the sky, and people came out to check on it. In fact, the first two guys that got there picked up a piece of it to taste it and decided it was like mutton. So this is a whole completely different time. And it turns out one of the explanations was there were a whole bunch of vultures flying together, and they started throwing up. You know how it is. When one throws up, the other one throws. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of like yawning, okay? And so they all threw up at the same time, and it was a shower of meat. So, you know, now she said they got scared.
I'm really glad we didn't call the show The Breakfast Club or something like that. You know what I mean?
Can I just say, because I have been troubled by the Kentucky meat shower story since you did it, Lamar. I don't understand how anybody, meat is falling from the sky and you pick it up and put it in your mouth. Like, how does anybody do that?
I know.
Yeah. That's more unbelievable than meat was raining down. I mean, honestly.
That's true.
Meat is raining down. That's very true. And the two guys get there and they're like, they pick it up. What do you think? It tastes like mutton to me. Wait.
All right. I'm going to need you now to put a dollar value on how much I have to pay you. Let me start with you, Bob Lacey. How much money, and be realistic, do you have to get in order to pick up a piece of meat that's fallen from the sky and put it in your mouth and taste it? How much?
It depends. The price will be different if I'm alone or with my wife. Because, like, if I'm making dinner and we're going to have some carrots and I'm cutting them up, she will say, I hope you wash those carrots. And you know, sometimes they'll say it says pre-washed. Well, I don't care what it says. Wash them anyway. There's fertilizer or something on them. Please wash them because I don't want to eat them otherwise. So if I'm alone and that's my job.
Well, now, it's not your job. You just walked up, and somebody says, hey, Bob, well, I pay you to pick up a piece of meat that this fell out of the sky.
Oh, I thought I was called in to investigate.
No, you're just there, and somebody says, hey, what would you charge to pick up a piece of meat?
$5,000. $5,000. And if my wife was there, it would have to be $25,000.
I think I know why, but perhaps you could explain.
She would never kiss me again.
I know Mary Lacey, and there is not any scenario in the world, even one that involves 25 grand, where she watches you pick up a piece of flesh that just rained down from the sky and put it in your mouth and stays with you. They're just, I just don't see it. And I don't think there's a judge in the land. I don't think there's a judge in the land that would go against her on that. The judge would go, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Did you just say that there was meat falling from the sky and he picked it up and put it in his mouth?
Right.
I rule in favor of the plaintiff.
It's true.
Oh, no.
That's my price.
That woman can smell thirsty people. You think she's going to share 1 minute of her life with a man that eats meat that falls from the sky? No.
How about French kissing? What's the likelihood of French kissing happening
over
at my house?
Yeah.
Never.
That's never happening. You're going to have to order one of those devices I used to see in the back of Cosmo magazine. It's like a battery-operated mouth. You're going to have to get you one of them. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when it comes, you know what Mary's going to say? She's going to say, oh, you have your little battery-operated mouth. Why didn't you put the meat in that? Why'd you put it in your mouth?
Yeah, that's right. It's a no-win situation for me.
You've just ruined your life, Bob. And no one your own fault. Yeah, there you go.
I was hungry. What can I say?
It's Bob and Sherry.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate happy hour Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page.
This is the most British of British stories that I've seen in a while. It has to do with a treasure hunter, and he lives near a town called Oxfordshire and a small rural town. And he is one of those guys who goes magnet fishing, where you probably have seen one from time to time. It's a guy, they're standing over a river on a bridge, and they have a magnet, and they're just seeing what floats by, right? So this guy, and wait till I tell you his name. His name is Trevor Penny. That's like out of a Beatles song. Trevor Penny. And over the years, he has discovered and dredged up old railway tools, a grenade from World War II, and a bunch of other things that are kind of interesting. Well, the other day, he was doing a little bit of fishing, magnet fishing, and Trevor Penny pulls up a 1,000-year-old Viking sword. And it's a big one. You can see the handle. It's coated with some sort of debris, sand that has attached itself, you know, from all of these years. But you have to take it, according to British law, to the authorities, whoever they are. People who, when discoveries are made, they take a look at it and they decide whether or not it's going to go into a British museum. So that is what he did. And they say, yeah, it's real. It's real. The Vikings were in this area. And the Vikings thought that rivers were like the pathways of the gods. So when they weren't burning down your village or, you know, attacking your sister or plundering is the word that's always used. And that's an interesting word, plundering. They were trying to figure out where they were. They were traveling on one of the rivers of the gods. And, you know, maybe they were in a fight. Maybe somebody just fell over. The boat capsized. I don't know. And down went this sword. But this, you should see the look on Trevor Penny's face. This man has been looking for something like this all his life. And he finally found it. I was interested about the grenade. Boy, if I'm just walking by there and I say, hey there, Trevor, what you got there? Grenade. Woohoo, I'm getting away from there. And the thing was still good. They had to explode it. They had to bring in experts to explode the thing. So, what
is he
going to
get anything for this thing? Is he going to be
nothing.
Able to make money?
Zero. You don't get anything.
I'm not for that. I'm against it.
Not either.
Not for it. I'm not for it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know it. It doesn't say how much it's worth, but would you not be tempted, knowing that you're not going to get anything for it, would you not be tempted to keep it yourself?
I'd be on eBay with that bad boy.
I'd be on Antiques Roadshow. Because you know they always they. So tell us about this. Well, I fished it out of a river with a magnet. I mean, it would be a great story.
Yeah,
it's a great
thing,
story.
Bob, you know, you may not get money for it, but isn't there some glory in knowing that you found this historical artifact that's going to end up in a museum?
I think there is, but Lamar's looking at the financials on this and doesn't like it. The picture of him holding the sword, his face is so happy. He's 52 years old. He's been doing this for about 15 years. And this is payday for him just to have found this to sake, because he goes home. And if he's got a wife, she said, she doesn't even want to hear about it. You think that if you've been doing this for 15 years, standing over a bridge with a magnet, that your wife wants to hear about you, you came up with like a horseshoe or something like that. She doesn't. But then he walks through the door and he says, "Hi, dear. I've spent the day fishing." "Yes, I know. I know. Just whatever. What did you find?" "A 1,000-year-old sword from the Vikings." Yeah. Right there. All of his, what do you call it? Occupation when it's not, you don't get paid.
Hobby.
Hobby.
It's a hobby, or there's another word for it.
Avocation.
Obsession. Avocation. Obsession. His avocation has just for 15 years paid off.
But then she's going to say, "What do you think we can get for it?" "Oh, we don't get nothing."
Yeah.
Really?
You're right. You're exactly right.
Really? Nothing? Hey, just, here's what I'd say to the government.
Hand it over.
You can have this sword when you can pry it out of my cold, dead, rusty hands.
Hey, I'm over here thinking back to the last time Kevin and I took Ada for a walk to the park, and she found a piece of old chewed up pink gum and said, "Look, a magic stone." So a 1,000-year-old Viking sword. I can't even imagine finding that. I just found somebody's ABC gum. It was disgusting. All right, straight ahead. This is the best story. Oh, my gosh, this is the best story. Why people shout, "Geronimo," when they jump out of an airplane. You're going to be just like, "What did I just hear?" It's Bob and Sherry.
Can you believe this is sponsored by Progressive Insurance? Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com.
You read it once.
I don't believe that.
And then you read it again.
I can't believe this.
It's Bob and Sherry's.
I believe this.
I am so excited to tell you guys this story. Do you ever wonder why parachutists and paratroopers yell "Geronimo" when they go out of an airplane? Did you ever wonder about that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is awesome. So back in the early 1940s, the Army was trying out, kind of testing the idea of having troops jump out of planes in active combat. We take this kind of thing for granted, but once upon a time, this was like a wild, new, wacky idea. And the first group to really experiment with it and begin developing the kind of paratrooper techniques that we take for granted now was a unit of 50 soldiers. They were called the Parachute Test Platoon. And you had to have some brave to be part of the Parachute Test Platoon.
They Who would were like based. To put their hand in the air? Oh, yeah. Woo. How about it, Lamar? Oh, yeah, that's us.
They were based, you guys, at Fort Benning, Georgia. Shout out to all of our Columbus listeners in Fort Benning,
there
Georgia. And they spent one long hot summer in these grueling training sessions all day long in the crushing Georgia heat, wearing all of their standard gear plus these heavy parachutes, because we didn't have stuff like Gore-Tex back then. It was heavy. And when training was done for the day, the parachute test platoon, of course, they would want to chill out and loosen up. And there was a movie theater on the base, Fort Benning, called Main Post Theater. And every night they would play a different movie for the soldiers. So now it's August 1940, and the parachute test platoon heads over to the post theater. And they are screening the Paramount classic Western, Geronimo. And after the movie, there was beer. And they were drinking beer and they were like talking smack. And as they're heading back to the barracks, they got to talking about the jump they were doing the next day, which was their very first jump as a group. Each one of these soldiers had a couple of solo jumps under their belts. They were all nervous and scared. And one of them, a 6'3" soldier from Georgia named Aubrey Eberhardt, said, "I ain't scared. I ain't worried. This mass jump gonna be nothing." And so the other soldiers started heckling him, giving him a hard time. They said, "You are scared. You should just admit it. You should just admit it." And Aubrey Eberhardt said, "Here's what I'm gonna do to prove to you that I ain't scared of nothing." when I go out that plane store, I'm going to yell Geronimo as loud as I can. And they were like, no, you're not. No, you're not, because you're scared like us. The next day, they put their gear on. The plane goes aloft. And the first guy out of the plane is Private Aubrey Eberhardt. And what does he yell? Geronimo! Well, the rest of his platoon wasn't going to let him be the only one. So on every jump afterward, the soldiers took up the battle cry of Geronimo. It's a tradition. The next year, the Army's very first official parachute unit, the 501st Parachute Infantry Battalion, made Geronimo the motto on their unit insignia after their commander tracked down the descendants of the real Geronimo and said, may we have permission to use your name? Now, Geronimo's real name was Goyacla. Geronimo was a nickname about his fierceness when fighting the Mexican soldiers who prayed to Saint Jerome. So the chief gave his permission. But after World War II, the bosses at the Army were like, listen, we can't do this. Not because we don't want you yelling Geronimo, but if we're parachuting in and we're trying to be stealthy, what if the enemy hears you guys yelling, Geronimo, and it gives away your position? And because the heavy media coverage of this first ever paratroop battalion, which was so exciting, put Geronimo on the public map, the Army was like, we've got to be quiet, you guys, when we're jumping out of airplanes across enemy territory. So even though the paratroopers don't do that now when they're in combat, the idea of yelling Geronimo when you jump out of a plane caught fire. And now, like, amateur skydivers and hobby skydivers do it too. And it's all thanks to the beer-soaked brag of one Georgia private named Aubrey Eberhardt, who was the very first U.S. soldier to jump out of an airplane in a mass jump. Yeah. Round of applause.
Yeah. I wouldn't have yelled that. I would have yelled, help me, help me, Jesus. Help me, Jesus.
Is that not the best freaking story? Aren't you so glad you lived long enough to hear it? Yeah, we'll post that up on the Bob and Sherry Facebook. This is Bob and Sherry.
It's the stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, shouldn't do on the regular show. The Oddcast. Oddcast on the free Bob and Sherry app.
I'm just going to read this story about Zillow, the real estate posting company. Zillow says early June is the best time to sell your house if you're planning to sell your home in 2024. Zillow says the first 2 weeks of June could be the best time. Zillow's analysis from 2023 indicates homes listed during that period sold for 2.3% more, roughly an additional for the average home, $7,700 compared to other times of the year. This period lines up with historic industry beliefs that late spring and early summer, the best times to sell a house. So that's the feeling right now. But you know what? These things never work for me. I'm going to wait. Say Mary and I wanted to sell this house and, I don't know, move into a condo. I'd get a hold of a real estate agent who would have a name something like Kathy. And I would say, Kathy, all right, well, what do you think? I'm ready to cash in big time and get that additional $7,700. And Kathy would say, well, I guess that would be possible, but our local predictions are that this is the worst time of the year to sell your house. So we're going to suggest that you drop it by about $30,000, Bob. Why do these things... you know, paint your house, you'll get more money. Never happens for me. Put on a new roof. Never happens for me. But when I go in to buy one, oh, well, this is a very competitive time of the year. I would go in asking over, asking price. What is it with me with these things?
Some people are lucky with real estate. We aren't. We're never on the right side of any of it.
One
time. You just have to accept that, and then you'll stop being bitter. Like, I've accepted it.
Why do you have to accept it? It's not right. We should be able to screw somebody just like we get screwed. Right? That's what it's all about.
On paper, yeah, but it's not working that way. So the path to misery is false expectations. You need to expect a whooping. And then when it comes, you're not surprised and you're able to move on.
I have a speed pass to the path of misery, by the way. Did you know that? I do.
That's the best real estate you ever bought. It's been the most consistent, it is. Has it not?
You're right, exactly. It's Bob and Sherry.
It's Bob and Sherry, the podcast.
Okay, don't shoot the messenger on this one, but according to this article that I'm reading, table manners are dying out as younger people abandon mealtime etiquette. Chewing loudly, eating off of other people's plates, and using a mobile phone are now regular events, according to this little research. Not waiting for everyone's food to arrive before starting. Putting elbows on the table and open mouth chewing. Oh, come on, folks. Open mouth chewing are becoming commonplace. Also, pets are now joining us at the dinner table. I know Mary hates it, but I don't have a problem with that. 3/4 of us say we believe people care less about table manners. Gen Z folks born in the 1990s and 2000s evidently are the, I hate to use the words, but worst offenders. They have the most relaxed approach. Well, maybe that's the way to call it, the relaxed approach, with most believing dining etiquette is irrelevant. While a third admit to checking their phone at the table, the only place the rules still hold sway, this is interesting, is on the date when you're dating. Half of the people say they would shun somebody who had poor table manners. And that is strange because if you're acting, you know, very posh at the date, and then all of a sudden you're picking your teeth, you know, with a piece of bone, when you finally relax with that person, they're going to know, you know, that's who you are. I think it's sad personally. I mean, we don't have to come to the dinner table wearing black tie, but you know, if there's like 6 or 8 people eating, for heaven's sakes, don't start eating until the hostess or the last person's plate is put down. It's just genteel.
Yeah. I couldn't, if I was on a date with somebody that had terrible table manners, I couldn't do it. Let me just go ahead and say this. My biggest thing, chewing ice. I hate people chewing ice.
A lot of people loathe too.
I loathe it.
Here's what I really hate.
Don't chew the ice and then talk to me while you're chewing the ice. I don't know. I just can't stand that. I can't stand it. Yeah. Can't stand it.
I don't like when people don't use a napkin when they're eating. And you know how you don't like chewing ice? So as soon as someone starts chewing ice, it's the only thing you can see. And you can be in a crowded room and 10 feet away, someone starts chewing ice and your eye immediately goes there. That's how I am with napkin usage.
What does a person do if they don't use a napkin? Are they wiping it on their hands? Are they wiping it on their sleeve?
I've seen them lick. It's, you know, okay, if you're at the Colonel and it's finger licking good, okay, but what are you doing licking your fingers while you're eating breakfast?
Or their
clothing. I've actually seen that too. And that just makes me.
The napkins are right there and they're free. They're free. You know, go ahead and use it. I don't get that one at all. I don't know why the thing about starting eating before everybody else is served gets to me. I think because
not
I was
everybody
brought up
thinks
with my
that,
father
though,
eating alone.
Not everybody thinks that, because I'll be in places and like with a fairly large group, like at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there waiting and, you know, a couple of people hadn't got their food or whatever. And I'll look over and I'll see somebody eating and I'm thinking, what are you doing? You know.
Now, if somebody says, go ahead and start so it doesn't get cold, I'm cool with that, you know, especially if it's the hostess of the night, you know, and she says that.
Yeah.
Because she always gets hers last. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I had to learn things like that myself because my old man would eat, you know, the roast beef by himself, you know, smoking a cigarette while reading the newspaper. The rest of us, you know, my mother was just picking in the kitchen. My brother and I'd sit alone and eat food.
The biggest thing for me is table manners. When I cook a meal and I say, okay, dinner's ready, I want to see you up and moving toward the table.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to see some hustle as you make your way to that meal. It infuriates me. Like, I'm sorry.
Thank
I have two questions for you. One, what the hell do you think you are to sit
there? Preach it, mama, preach it.
And number two, are your affairs in order? Because I'm about to kill you. Because that is so rude.
Have you ever thrown a plate at somebody that just, after three or four tries, came in?
No, it's my fantasy. It's my lifelong fantasy to do that.
I figured.
It's been a few years ago, but my crowd's here, and I'm in, and I'm cooking. I got everything ready. And I come in, I say, hey, everything's ready. Okay, we'll be there in a minute. Three times I said, everything's ready. I went in and fixed my plate. I'm sitting down. I'm eating. They come in and go, what are
you
doing?
For you.
Oh no.
That's,
you.
Lamar, that's what I times. Do now.
Yeah, that's what I do. It's hot. I've cooked it. I'm not going to eat it cold. I agree.
Right. All right, everyone, exactly. Dinner. And I give you like a 10-minute warning. All right, we're going to have dinner. Dinner will be ready in about 10. Dinner. Yeah. I don't see your faces coming. I'm going to sit here and eat my dinner. And good luck to you. And you're lucky. Yeah. You're lucky that I didn't chuck a bowl at your head.
It's Bob and Sherry.
It's the stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, shouldn't do on the regular show. The Oddcast. Oddcast on the free Bob and Sherry app.
We're giving you a chance to win up to $250 worth of Dr. Marty's Nature's Blend dog food. Just go to the Love My Pup contest page at bobandsherry.com and upload a picture of your dog. It's sponsored by Dr. Marty's Pet Food. Get up to 54% off your first order at drmartypets.com/bob.
We're talking, just a moment ago, we're talking about the concept that manners, especially at the table, are dwindling with younger people. They're just being much more casual. And Lamar said, we'll pick it up. You were on the beer truck. This is back when you were a young man. You're on the beer truck for Schlitz beer.
Yeah. I worked for Schlitz back in the late 70s, early 80s. And when we had our Christmas party, the guy that owned us, he lived up in New York, and he came down and he would take us to eat. At it's this place in Spartanburg. It's called the Piedmont Club. It's a private dining, you know, whatever. And so
it's like a country club, but it's not. It doesn't have.
It's a country club without a golf course.
Without a golf course, right.
It's a private dining place, and the food is extraordinary. So we go in and sit down, and I mean, they've got all the silverware stacked out, lined up. I got no idea, and the food was fantastic. But like we were talking about, I really could not enjoy the food because I'm watching, trying to figure out, you know, what's what. Because I don't want to be stupid, but I mean, it was a very intimidating situation.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, when I was a kid, I lived in a single wide trailer, and we had a fish pond, and my mom would catch fish. We'd go, you know, fishing and whatever, catch fish, and so. There was no filleting a fish. I mean, they would descale it or skin it off, whatever, but nobody filleted it, so it still had the bone. And so my idea of table manners was we would have a stack of loaf bread, sliced loaf bread in the middle of the table, and as you're eating the fried fish, if you got a bone stuck in your throat, instead of making a big deal about it, you just got a piece of bread and ate the bread where it would grab the bone and take it on down your throat. That's about as good as we got. I mean,
oh my!
And that didn't happen at the Piedmont Club, huh?
No, it didn't.
I have a question. Well, it's a two-part question, I guess. The first part is, does that work? And two, did you ever see that work? At your family
dish
table.
Oh, listen, because I was a kid. Parents know how to get the bones out, but they're not picking the fish off for you. I mean, this is live or die, survive. I mean, this is how you learn to eat fish. And first thing I remember, my mom said, aren't you old enough to eat fish? And she said, that loaf of bread right there, she said, if you feel like you've got a bone in your throat, she said, because there's a lot of little bones in there, you might get a bone in your throat. If you do, don't start hacking and all that at the table. It don't look good. And she said, don't panic. Just get you a piece of loaf of bread and put it and eat it. And it'll grab. And sure enough, I've got a few bones stuck in my throat. And that loaf of bread, get it out every time.
Hey, Lamar, I'm so glad you told us that story and not the folks at the Piedmont Club.
Well, you know, here's the irony. Here's the irony. This is the irony of my life. This is the irony of my life. In the late 70s, I'm in this place and I'm so intimidated, I can't eat. Now, I'm a member of the club and I can walk in anytime. And you know what? I still take a beat before I look at which knife and fork I'm grabbing, but I'm okay.
That means you didn't get above your raisin. Yep. No matter how successful, you didn't get above your raisin.
Yeah. And you know, y'all are laughing, but there are people listening right now going, hey, that's a good idea. Because, you can get a salmon fillet at the grocery store and it has some bones
still
in it.
Still got bone. That's right.
Lamar, you're doing the Lord's work.
Next time I go into the Captain D's that has been recommended by Lamar.
Well, but you do that with the bread. No. It'll take you out of ketosis, so.
Yeah.
Long John Silver's, Bob, and ask you for some extra crumbs.
Captain D's slaw no good. Captain D, they're out of business. Okay. No slaw,
right,
no good.
I forgot. All right. Thank you, Lamar. That was really enlightening. It's Bob and Sherry.
Now, let's open up the Bob and Sherry Archive Vault.
What were you thinking at the moment of the proposal? Hey, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
Good morning.
Good morning. What was the deal?
So we were in a long-distance relationship, and I had gone to see him for Christmas, and I got there the day after Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And I knew it was coming. I absolutely knew it was coming, and so I didn't know if he was going to do that at the airport or wait to, you know, New Year's Eve or whatever. So the night that I get there, we're sitting in his car in his driveway discussing the things that we need to do that night. Like, we need to go to Walmart, we need to do this, we need to pick up this. And he picked a fight, like just a stupid fight over, I can't even remember. But anyway, and so in the middle of this fight, he slams his hand up and turns on the dome light. And I turn around to look at him like, what is your problem? And he has the ring sitting there right in the light, right in my face. And he goes, so will you? And I was thinking, are you kidding me? We are in a fight in your driveway.
Was it a legitimate fight or was he staging it?
Did he stage it?
I think he staged it.
Oh, come on. You know one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I don't. He was kind of weird, so he probably staged it.
Oh, they're no longer together.
Oh no, we're not. No.
Did you last
very long at all? Yeah. If you can't put more thought into how you're going to ask me to do the biggest favor of my life than to pick a fight in your driveway,
hang on one second.
Yeah,
up, sister.
Yeah, hold it right
did
there.
Did you just say you're going to ask me to do the biggest favor of my life?
Pretty much.
Like marrying him was doing him the biggest favor.
Well. Okay, that's probably not the best way to phrase it, but that's essentially what they're doing.
No, I mean, I'm not arguing. I just wanted to make sure I heard it right.
Oh, Amy, I feel like I know you, hon.
Did you say no in the moment, or did you say yes and then break it off?
I said yes, because at that point, I did really want to, but I was very disappointed, and we had a long discussion about how this happened later on.
So let me get this straight. He put the ring in that little light above in the ceiling of the car.
Yes.
And so you could see like the outline of it.
Well, apparently he had a really good dome light because it was actually sparkling and it was a beautiful ring.
Oh.
I hated giving it up, but you know, I would rather give that up and give him up at the same time.
You gave the ring back.
I offered it back, and he said that I could keep it, and then I didn't want it, so I sold it and, you know, paid my mom back for, you know, the wedding dress that she had bought and, you know, things like that.
Well, that was a nice favor he did for you.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Right back at you.
Wow, Amy, you are more like everything in one random moment than I've been in my whole life. More confident, more
energized,
like sure of your own value.
Right.
All of that.
Well, thanks. I don't feel that way. Thank you.
Trust me, you really are. So how did your two stories end? Like, where is he today? Where are you today?
I have no idea where he is. I was in the process of moving out there, and I ended up not moving out there. Mm-hmm. So I'm still where I was, and I'm assuming he's still where he is. And I'm We really have no circles in common, so I have no idea.
So have you done anybody else a favor?
No, I haven't, actually. I haven't found the right one, but I would rather be alone than be with the wrong one, which he taught me that, by the way.
Very good. That was a good thing. Good for you. More people should realize that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, Amy, it is so nice to meet you.
You too.
All right. And take care of yourself.
I will, because you know your value.
That's right.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Take care now. Bye, Amy. You know, come to think of it, my first two.
Did you a favor?
No, I was doing them a favor. I did them a favor.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it. Don't you feel better like when you rethink your past?
Right. I'm kind of like Mr. Favor.
Yeah. Mr. Big Favor.
Mr. Big Damn Favor. Yeah. Mr. Giant Favor.
That could be your new rap name, MC Big Favor.
Yeah.
And that's a great rap name.
That's a good one.
Big Favor.
P-H-A-V-A-H.
Yeah.
And then, they could call me BF for short.
I don't know about that one. You always take it one step too far, my man.
Although he's used to answering to it.
Yeah, I sure am. One too many again.
Oh, I just love the way she said that. Is this how he asks me to do the biggest favor of my life?
I know, I did too. I have more rap names than Puffy Combs.
You really do. You really do. Yeah. It's so sad that there's no way for me to make a living off of my ability to come up with excellent rapper names. I wonder if a guy
were to say what she just said. So anyway, I know she wanted me, so I said I'd do you a big favor and marry you. There's no way.
To have that kind of confidence, like for you to look at your wife and go, "I did you a favor by marrying you."
Did you a favor by getting married to you? You know what? That marriage was doomed because she knew that he was getting a favor done for him by her saying yes, because she's really hot and together. She didn't have the respect that maybe she needed from a guy.
The other thing I like about Amy, we asked if she kept the ring, and she was like, no. Well, yes, I did.
I sold it for my mom.
Ways to get in touch with the Bob and Sherry Show. Stick your head out a window and yell, "Hey, Bob and Sherry.
Hey, Bob and Sherry."
Get the Bob and Sherry free app for your phone and leave us a talkback message.
"Hey, Bob and Sherry."
Email us through the Bob and Sherry website, bobandsherry.com, or email us hello@bobandsherry.com. Or you can call 1-844-52-SHERRY.
Hello, Bob and Sherry.
Leave us a DM on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page. Or you can just kick it old school and yell out the window,
"Hey, Bob and Sherry!"
It's the stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, shouldn't do on the regular show. The Oddcast. Oddcast on the free Bob and Sherry app.
You don't think about it today, but, you know, not that long ago, having a landline telephone was a status symbol. Think about that. A status symbol. Today, most people don't even have them, or you've got to deal with your cable company or whatever, and you've got a phone number, but you don't have a phone to plug into the jack. Here's another one. Not all that long ago, encyclopedia sets were a status symbol. It was a sign that a family, family had something.
Love that.
And now with the internet, like, when was the last time you even thought about having an encyclopedia? You just wouldn't do it. Do you remember when a big status symbol was having a pager? And now if you see somebody with a pager, you're like, okay, let me guess.
Police.
You're a drug dealer or some sort of paramedic. Police. Nobody else would have it. Here's another status symbol that today you couldn't give it away. You remember when the personal computer first came out and the monitor had a cathode ray tube like the old-fashioned televisions, and the monitor was the size of a microwave oven?
It's true.
People in the early days of computer, in fact, a lot of your retro gamers hunt these CRT monitors down because they want them. But back in the day, you'd have a giant monitor sitting on your desk next to your giant processor and your keyboard, and you'd be like, yes, We only paid $6,000 for that. Now you can get a laptop at Walmart for $99.99. And here's another one, a cassette Walkman. Do you remember when that was the deal?
Oh, yeah.
You had to have
without
that?
A doubt. Yeah.
And the last one that we'll talk about, remember when having a full set of china was a status symbol? People still put it on their wedding registry.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you used your china or went to someone's house and they were using their china?
Mary has two sets from her grandmother. Yeah, and we don't use any of it. And I've said to her, you know, I didn't have this stuff as a kid. Why don't we do that? Yeah, I really don't want it. You know, can't be replaced. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So we're not going to use it because it can't be replaced. So we're just going to leave it wrapped in newspaper in a box in the attic. It's nuts. Like, it's just crazy. It's Bob and Sherry. Thank you so much for listening to the Bob and Sherry podcast, the Oddcast, and Talking Lamar. We would love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review, and maybe share it with a friend on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you go. And thank you again so much for listening.